There we go. Good morning, everybody. All right. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is September 10th, 2025. By the way, happy birthday to the man, the Mish, the legend, my moderator, Mish. Happy birthday, brother. Thank you for everything you do for the channel. The top story this morning, guys, is inflation, or should I say the lack thereof. The producer price inflation, or PPI, came out just a few moments ago, and it was kind of a shocker. That is the second month in a row that we got a little bit of a shocker in the PPI, and for two totally different reasons. First things first, the headline number. It came in at 2.6% year over year. That's versus expectations of 3.3%. So a big miss low for producer price inflation. Now, that is down rather sharply from the 3.3% that we got last month. Now, you recall last month, that 3.3% number scared the heck out of a lot of people. Everybody was saying, oh my God, there's the tariff inflation. It's filtering through. It has shown up with the producers. And then typically PPI inflation precedes CPI inflation, which would mean tariff consumer price inflation on the horizon. That was the big scare last month. It freaked a lot of people out, self-included. Well, not so much this month because we went right back down. And what's more, we got some big downward revisions to that shocking number from last month. The headline number was previously reported as 3.3%. That has now been revised down to just 3.1. Still high, but a lot less worrisome than it was. By the way, the PPI numbers are produced by the same Bureau of Labor Statistics that gave us that magnificent 911,000 downward revisions to the previously announced jobs numbers that we just got yesterday. The big annual benchmark revisions came out yesterday. And despite the seemingly endless monthly parade of downward revisions to the job numbers, we got one more big downward revision of 911,000 from the April 2024 through March 2025 timeframe. So government statistics continues to just knock it out of the park. Good job, guys. Keep up the bad work over there. Some other interesting information in these PPI numbers. Negative 0.1% month over month. Producer prices actually went down on the headline numbers. That is versus expectations of 0.3. And again, down sharply from 0.9% last month, or at least initially reported 0.9% last month. Remember those downward revisions, they took it down to 0.7. So again, last month's numbers not looking nearly as bad. We got the same thing with the core PPI numbers. We'll get into those and we'll show you the charts in a little bit. Lower than expected, down big from last month, downward revisions to last month. That is the story of producer price inflation. Markets are loving this news. Combined with yesterday's news of a big downward revision in jobs, a lot of people are probably thinking 50 basis points now. People are looking to that September FOMC meeting, and they're saying 25 is like guaranteed at this point, even though the federal judge came out and said President Trump can't fire Lisa Cook. We'll talk about that later in the show. I think that's a moot point now. The Fed is going to cut in September, unless we get some magnificent disaster tomorrow in the CPI, which I doubt is going to happen. And even if it does happen, it would have to be pretty bad to change the Fed's course at this point. 25 basis points is going to happen. But after the big jobs revisions yesterday, after the downward revisions to PPI inflation today, the big miss on PPI inflation today, I think a lot of people have 50 basis points in their sights here. My personal opinion is that's not going to happen, but people are thinking that this morning, probably contributing to some of the run-up in stocks that we're getting. So, you know, the tariff inflation scare, guys, it got a little ahead of itself last month. Apparently, the sprinkle a little bit of government statistical reporting error on top of that, there's a little bit of relief this morning. Also going on, big news this morning, Oracle earnings. Guys, I don't know what to do with this one, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record about this AI bubble, too late. But Oracle earnings was just a masterclass in the stupidity of the average investor, in the total lack of accountability among executives in Silicon Valley, the hype machine that's going on there. Oracle reported an earnings and revenue miss yesterday. They missed on the top line. They missed on the bottom line. It despite some growth numbers, they did report impressive growth, but the market was expecting more growth than they got. So this was a whiff by Oracle. And yet the stock is ripping 31% higher this morning. WTF is going on here? Well, you can thank Larry Ellison's hype machine and the, what is it, remaining performance obligations. And you're like, what? RPO, huh? What does that even mean? Yeah, that's apparently that's a new thing. It doesn't matter if you make money. It doesn't matter if you meet expectations. It doesn't matter what your forecast is. It doesn't matter about accounting principles. Just make up things like our backlog, revenue that we're not even going to see for 5 freaking years because, you know, it's not like a lot could happen in 5 years, right? We could enter a recession. World War III could break out. Now, forget it. This is like money in the bank. Larry Ellison says, oh, we've got a 359% increase in remaining performance obligations. Basically, their backlog. They signed a bunch of probably non-binding contracts with a bunch of companies that don't have the money to pay those non-binding contracts. And they're reporting that as part of their quarterly earnings. And of course, the same people who bid up stock in a freaking WorldCoin treasury company by 3,000% a few days ago are now rolling that money into Oracle shares. And Oracle stock is up big on this news. Reporting revenue forecast 5 years from now, that's a new low even for this AI mania, but Oracle shareholders are making bank this morning off of that news. Larry Ellison is now the second richest man in the world. He's nipping at Elon Musk's heels. He's only about $26 billion behind him. That is barely the GDP of Trinidad behind the world's first and second richest people. Okay, there's a lot to like in that story there, isn't there? We talked about Lisa Cook. A federal judge said Trump can't fire her for that. Basically, the mortgage fraud story doesn't amount to cause. What does that mean? It means nothing right now. We all knew that was headed to the Supreme Court and that they were ultimately going to make the decision. It's probably not going to happen in time for the September FOMC meeting, but it is immaterial to the September FOMC meeting because the Fed's probably going to cut anyway. We got some serious geopolitical developments in the last couple of days, a couple of hours. We had 19, by the last count, 19 Russian drones invaded Polish airspace yesterday. Maybe that's a bad choice of words. A bunch of drones fired by Russia went into Poland. Some of them got shot down by NATO air defenses. Some of them didn't. Was this a probe of Polish air defenses measuring NATO's response? Was this the Russian attack against NATO, a preemptive invasion? Was this a false flag attack? Nobody freaking knows. The internet keyboard warriors are alive and well this morning. All we do know is a bunch of drones supposedly fired from Russia hit NATO member Poland yesterday. We are not at war yet. Poland has evoked Article 4 of the NATO Charter. Remember, Article 5 is the big one. That's the one where we're all at war all at once. They didn't go that far. Article 4 was like, hey, we need to have a meeting and talk seriously about this thing that happened. Not quite everybody goes to war yet, but wow. World just going a little bit closer towards the brink this morning. Israel targeted a bunch of top Hamas leaders in Qatar. That is a neutral country, or at least a U.S. ally, and not a country Israel is at war with. They blew up a building inside Qatar, and these Hamas officials were at the building for peace talks. Guys, blowing up peace talks is not really how you bring an abrupt conclusion to a war. That's going on as well. So, yeah, we got missiles flying, bombs blowing up, drones sailing into NATO airspace. We got that going for us this morning. China's deflation worries have eased just a little bit in the last month. Brazil's coffee exports to the United States are way, way down, but their exports to other countries are way, way up. It kind of looks like countries are doing transshipments of Brazilian coffee in order to sell it into the U.S. markets without paying those higher tariffs. Agricultural products remains one of the key fronts in this trade war. A lot of countries are targeting U.S. agricultural exports and buying from Brazil in order to avoid that. And then, of course, Brazil's big agricultural export to the United States is coffee. And it looks like they're moving musical coffee beans around the world in order to avoid tariffs. And we've got riots in France protesting spending cuts as all the little wannabe commies who somehow managed to get the day off of work went and had a riot. They're burning buses and blockading gas stations. That's That's good, clean fun. France has a new prime minister. It's his job to cut spending. Good luck with that one. And, of course, we devote a little bit of time in every show to this silly private assets thing that's going on in the markets. We got an article in CNBC that says you, the investor, is clamoring for exposure to private assets. Not really sure that's true, though. I don't actually know of anybody who says, boy, I can't wait to invest in this garbage. But according to CNBC, that's what they're saying this morning. We got a lot to talk about this morning, guys. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the markets. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button. Come on back tomorrow. Have your coffee with us, melon heads, because we do this every single morning. And right now, the market is celebrating that PPI report. We got a big green candle right there. That was the inflation worry subsiding. And people said, hey, let's buy some stocks on slower than expected producer price inflation. The S&P 500 higher by 36 points, up about 0.56% ahead of the opening bell. The Dow is also up this morning about 15 points, 0.03%, giving back some of those gains. The Dow had been in negative territory for much of the morning, but now we're positive. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, up 130 points, 0.55% higher for the tech-heavy NASDAQ. Meanwhile, we got a U.S. dollar that's essentially unchanged here. The DXY is at 97.79, up by one basis point. Not a whole lot going on in Forex this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we got yields are modestly lower. Not a big reaction in bonds to that lower than expected PPI print. The 30-year Treasury is at 4.715. That's down by a fraction of 1 point. The 10-year is at 4.058. That's off by a point and change. The 2-year, 3.521, lower by 2 basis points. And the 1 month is lower by 1 point at 4.151. The market continues to price that 1 month in line with what is expected at the FOMC, which would take us down to about 4.0 within the next week or so. Looking over at the commodities board, we got a lot of green this morning. Gold is up 19 bucks. Spot gold is up 19 bucks. $3,645 for spot gold. That's higher by about 0.5%. My favorite of the shiny silver is higher as well. Spot silver is at $41.04. That's up by about 17 cents or 0.41% this morning. I like the shiny, even though metals had a rough day yesterday, clawing back some of those losses this morning. Copper is higher by 0.72%. Platinum is higher by 1.36%. Palladium up by 6.5%. Look at that big move in palladium this morning. Not sure what's driving that one. And crude oil is higher by 1.13%, $63.34 a barrel for October WTI futures. That's up by about 71 cents. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, Bitcoin seems to be liking that lower than expected PPI print. $113,766 as priced on Coinbase. That's up by about 2,200 bucks from yesterday. Keep an eye on that 50-day moving average in Bitcoin, guys. I expect a little bit of resistance there. We're still, though, about 1,000 bucks shy of that level. All right, let's talk about what happened with PPI. First things first, here is the chart. These are monthly snapshots of the headline year-over-year increase in producer price inflation. It came in at 2.6%. Again, that is sharply lower than that 3.3% that was expected. And you can see we're down from 3.1% last month. And that number last month was originally up here. This was originally reported as 3.3%. So not only did we get that lower than expected number, but we got a big downward revision to last month's number. Downward revisions, that is the way of things at the Bureau of Labor Statistics these days. On a month-over-month basis, we got prices moving lower, believe it or not. A little bit of producer price deflation for the month of August. Negative 0.1% month-over-month. That is versus expectations of 0.3% increase. And that is down sharply from the 0.7% we had in July, which was initially reported as 0.9%. There's that downward revision again. Now let's talk about core PPI. That's stripping out volatile food and energy, and it's the same story. Core PPI came in at 2.8%. The market was expecting a much higher, 3.5. So a big beat downward or big beat low for producer price inflation, and also down sharply from 3.4% last month, which was initially reported as 3.7% last month. So that scare of PPI inflation is really, really been walked back by these downward revisions this morning. And the last one is the month-over-month core PPI. Same story. We actually got some monthly deflation in producer prices, down 0.1%. That is versus expectations of a 0.3% increase, down sharply from the 0.7% last month, which was initially reported as 0.9. Once again, downward revisions to the July number. So take all this data in aggregate, guys. This is a big sigh of relief by markets here that the tariffs are not yet going to cause a big spike inflation. Maybe we got kind of what the Fed was saying. We got a big jump, a one-time increase, and then it stayed there. You could argue that that's what we're seeing here. We had a step change last month. The step change wasn't as big as we initially thought, hence the downward revisions. And then they stopped going up, which is why we actually got a little bit of a negative number, negative 0.1. That's basically a rounding error. Either way, guys, if we were worried about a big surge in producer inflation derailing hopes for a Fed rate cut, so that is definitely not what happened this morning. At this point, the only thing that could possibly stop a 25 or dare I say a 50 basis point rate cut from the Fed would be a massive, massive spike in CPI, which we will get tomorrow morning. Don't forget to set your reminders, your calendars, tie a string around your finger, whatever you do. You don't want to miss the show tomorrow morning when we report consumer price inflation, which is what affects you and I more. All right, now we got to talk about the silliness, the nonsense, the tomfoolery, shenanigans, whatever you want to call it. Oracle pops 27%, should say 31%, on cloud growth projections, even as earnings miss estimates. Silly rabbit, nobody really cares about earnings. It's all about hype in this AI bubble, and Oracle is living proof about this morning. Let's see what happened. Oracle shares spiked 27% in extended trading on Tuesday, after the database software maker indicated hefty growth prospects due to new cloud contracts, even as earnings and revenue missed estimates. Guys, I feel like some people maybe ain't taking the walk with us here. I just want to say that even as earnings and revenue missed estimates, this was a whiff from Oracle, but the stock is ripping because some CEO with a reputation for saying things said some things. Here's how the company did. Earnings per share of $1.47. That's versus expectations of $1.48. Yep, that's a miss. Check. Revenue, $14.93 billion versus expectations of $15.04 billion. Yes, that is also a miss. So what happened? Well, revenue increased 12%. Okay, still growth, right? That's still a good number, but the market was expecting more growth. Didn't really get that. Revenue increased 12% from $13.3 billion a year earlier during the quarter, which ended August 31st. Net income was about flat. No, it wasn't. It was actually down at $2.93 billion or $1.01 per share. That's compared with $2.93 billion or $1.03 per share in the same quarter. Their net income actually declined. How do you make less money when you're like, oh my God, my remaining performance obligations are hundreds of billions of dollars? Why not make it a cool trillion, Larry, while you're at it? It doesn't matter. People aren't going to hold you to this number. But their earnings per share, I'm sorry, not earnings per share, their net income actually went down on a per share basis. So what actually happened? Oracle said its remaining performance obligations, a measure of contracted revenue that has not yet been recognized, soared to $455 billion, up 359% from a year earlier. During the quarter, OpenAI said it signed an agreement with Oracle to develop 4.5 gigawatts of U.S. data center capacity. That's the big thing here, guys. Oracle signed four big contracts with four companies. They didn't name them. One of them was OpenAI. And those contracts are for $455 billion through the end of 2030, all right? 2030, as in five freaking years from now. Since when do we forecast earnings 5 years from now? Oh, that's right. We only do that when we have bad earnings that we don't want people to pay attention to. So they said in Zero Hedge this morning, we've reached the stage of the AI bubble where they just make shit up. Just make numbers up and spout them off, and people will buy your stock, apparently. So overlooking the silliness of trying to forecast revenue 5 years in advance, Let's talk about this 4.5 gigawatts of data center capacity that they signed with OpenAI. OpenAI does not have the money to pay for that. All right. They just don't. And as a matter of fact, OpenAI may not be able to come up with that money because, recall, OpenAI is engaged in this big fight with Microsoft over becoming a for-profit company. Right now, it's a charity. That's hilarious. But OpenAI is trying to become a for-profit company, their biggest shareholder and their biggest one of their biggest customers. Microsoft basically says, no, you can't do that. That's going to mess with our earnings. So they're fighting over this. Now, all of the money OpenAI needs to pay for this data center capacity that they've contracted with Oracle is supposedly coming from SoftBank, who also doesn't have the money to give them to give to Oracle. And that money is contingent upon OpenAI becoming a for-profit company, which so far they've been unable to do, which means OpenAI may not be able to come up with the money to pay Oracle for these remaining performance obligations. And even if they are able to come up with the money, the people who are going to give it to them, how the heck are they going to come up to the money? Who cares? It doesn't really matter. The rules are just made up. The earnings are made up on the spot. Just buy the stock. This is the guys, it is just reaching such obscene proportions, this hype, this mania, this bubble. And look at what this stock is doing. It's up 32.75%, trading at $321, up almost 80 bucks ahead of the opening bell. Gotta love this market. I mean, hey, honestly, in the context of, you know, 3,000% increases in a WorldCoin treasury company, I guess this seems paltry by comparison. But as we said, Larry Ellison is now the second richest man in the world. Barely the GDP of Trinidad stands between his wealth and Elon Musk. And Gareth Soloway, want to send a shout out to Gareth on Twitter. He posted this one this morning, and this sums it up pretty well. Oracle misses earnings and revenue, but says their backlog is massive. Stock surges 22%, now 32%. This combined with microcaps announcing crypto positions and popping 3,000% has maxed out my ability to comprehend this market. Well said, Gareth, echoing my sentiments this morning. It's all just a bunch of made up crap. All right, we got this one at the Federal Reserve this morning. Trump can't fire Fed Governor Lisa Cook for now, a judge says. And well, we've had judges saying a lot of things this year. Ultimately, it's going to come down to the Supreme Court. A judge temporarily blocked President Donald Trump from removing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook, allowing her to remain on the job as she challenges the president's efforts to oust her over allegations of mortgage fraud. In an early victory for the embattled economist, U.S. District Judge Gia Cobb in Washington granted Cook's request to continue working for now. The ruling means Cook can likely attend a highly anticipated Fed policy meeting September 16th and 17th to vote on whether to lower rates. Where is it? I had it. I guess I didn't have it highlighted. The judge concluded that the alleged mortgage misconduct likely didn't amount to cause to fire her under the Federal Reserve Act, and that the way in which she was dismissed likely violated her due process rights under the Constitution. So look, we're headed to the Supreme Court now. They're going to decide, can the president fire a Federal Reserve governor for cause based on mortgage fraud, or I should say allegations of mortgage fraud? She hasn't even been charged. She certainly hasn't been tried or convicted. So right now we just have a guy said a thing on Twitter and Trump fired her over it. Yeah, that you could make the argument that that violates her due process rights. Absolutely. That being said, it's in the Supreme Court's court now. We'll see what they decide to do with it. Meanwhile, Poland shoots down Russian drones after airspace violation. All right, guys, get your 2020 bingo cards out because, well, here we are. Poland shot down drones that crossed into its territory during Russia's latest massive airstrike on neighboring Ukraine, calling it an act of aggression. Prime Minister Donald Tusk said the airspace violation in the early hours of Wednesday amounted to an international provocation from Moscow, forcing the NATO and European member state to close its airspace and order citizens in the eastern part of the country to stay indoors. The government in Warsaw is seeking NATO consultations on a potential response, a procedure known as Article 4, the premier said. Polish authorities registered 19 airspace violations, with a significant number of drones originating from Belarusian territory, Tusk said. There is no reason to claim that we are currently at war, Tusk told a session of parliament in Warsaw. However, there is no doubt that this provocation exceeds previous limits and is incomparably more dangerous for Poland than all previous ones. So they stop short of Article 5. We're not at war yet, but you know, we're one step closer, guys. Bunch of Russian drones landing in a NATO country. 2020's bingo for sure. And we also had this one, an Israeli strike in Qatar targets Hamas leaders as they weigh Gaza ceasefire proposal. It's almost like they don't really want a ceasefire when you blow up the peace talks. Kind of suggests you're not serious about peace. Israel struck the headquarters of Hamas's political leadership in Qatar on Tuesday as the group's top figures gathered to consider a U.S. proposal for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The strike on the territory of a U.S. ally marked a stunning escalation and risk upending talks aimed at winding down the war and freeing hostages. The United States said Israel alerted it before the strike, but American officials sought to distance the U.S. from the attack. The White House said President Donald Trump believes the strike was an unfortunate incident that didn't advance peace in the region. Gee, you think? Peace Secretary Caroline Leavitt said Trump spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and made his thoughts and concerns very clear. So blowing up the Hamas leaders as they weigh agreeing to a ceasefire, I'm going to go ahead and say that they're not going to agree to that ceasefire now after that one. All right. We got that going for us this morning. Shifting gears over to China. China's factory deflation eases, but not quite enough to call a turnaround. As we're sitting here talking about inflation in the United States, China, on the other side of the world, they are grappling with the opposite problem. They have a deflation problem in China. And, you know, to the average person who's been suffering through inflation in the last few years, I can imagine you'd be like, deflation? Well, heck, sign me up. And yeah, I wouldn't mind a little deflation myself here, but also keep in mind when you are a country up to your eyeballs in real estate debt, deflation means that debt gets even harder to pay off. So it's not like you're much better off. China's factory deflation eased for the first time in 6 months, even as consumer prices slipped below zero again, leaving open the question of whether the government will make a lasting difference with its campaign to ease overcapacity across the economy. The producer price index decreased 2.9% in August from a year earlier, the National Bureau of Statistics said on Wednesday, remaining in negative territory for the 35th straight month, but narrowing its decline from July's 3.6% drop. That's pretty crazy that 35 straight months, nine consecutive quarters of declines in producer prices. China's got too many factories, and now that we're in a trade war with the United States and the U.S. is buying less of their stuff, they're producing all this crap that nobody needs. They can't sell it to somebody else. You're not going to make up for the loss of U.S. markets by selling more consumer goods to sub-Saharan Africa. It just doesn't work that way. The math doesn't line up. On month-over-month terms, output prices in some upstream sectors, such as the mining and processing of metals, rose for the first time in months. Okay, so they did get a little bit of upward movement in prices. China is in its third straight year of deflation for the first time since it started to transition away from central planning in the late 1970s. Nine straight quarters of economy-wide price declines reflect a mismatch between supply and demand, weighing on the balance sheets of companies and pushing down the earnings of both households and the government. And it's those balance sheets of companies you got to worry about because they're the ones who pay everybody's bills. They're the ones who pay the paychecks. Those companies owe a ton of money. And if that money is getting more valuable, that means it's getting harder and harder to pay back, which means you could have more debt defaults. And of course, debt defaults are even more deflationary. So China could be stuck in a deflationary spiral here. And the trade war certainly isn't going to help with that. All right. Also going on in the trade war front, Brazil coffee exports to the U.S. fall in August, but surge elsewhere, industry says. It looks like coffee in the U.S. may be getting more expensive. So, you know, all you Graham Stephan fans out there, you may have to skip your Starbucks coffee twice every morning to make up for that now. Brazilian coffee exports to the United States fell 46% in August, while sales to Latin American neighbors surged. Coffee exporters group Secafe reported on Tuesday, even as industry leaders said re-exporting Brazilian beans via third countries was not an alternative for getting past U.S. tariffs. There's a lot to unpack in that sentence here. First of all, coffee exports to the United States fell by 46%. Brazil is by far our, well, not by far, but Brazil is our biggest supplier of coffee. Colombia is second. right behind them. So a 46% decline from our biggest supplier. That is a significant reduction in our imports of Brazilian coffee. So we are buying less coffee from Brazil, almost certainly because of this trade war. We put big tariffs on it. Now, we're probably buying more from Colombia here to make up for it because we haven't really seen coffee prices rip higher. They're higher, but not that much higher. Now, coincidentally, Brazil is exporting a lot of coffee to its Latin American neighbors. Well, that looks an awful lot like transshipment, like the Brazilians are trying to get around the tariffs on U.S. coffee by selling their coffee to Colombia, and then the Colombians are selling it to us for a lower tariff. It looks like that's what's going on. Now, that's something the Trump administration has been on the lookout for, mostly involving China and Vietnam. The trade deal we cut with Vietnam had a lot of riders attached to it about transshipments from China and policing methods and penalties for doing so. Look for something similar coming from South America here. Brazil remains one of the chief BRICS countries. Brazil has seen the benefit as China has bought a lot less U.S. agricultural products, much to the detriment of American farmers who are really hurting here, by the way. China hasn't been buying our row crops, and we're looking at a bumper harvest this year, which means there's a lot of corn in the United States with nowhere to go, arguably because the Chinese have been buying their corn and soybeans from Brazil, and now the U.S. is buying less coffee from Brazil. Global trade is just a mess, guys. And we've got this one here. Mortgage demand jumps to the highest level in 3 years as interest rates drop sharply. And we're seeing here mortgage demand, refinancing demand. It is highly sensitive to declines in rates. We saw a big drop in rates last week because of the jobs numbers. And people jumped on it to refi their house. A sharp drop in mortgage interest rates finally got some homebuyers off the fence. It also helped more current homeowners save on their monthly payments. Total mortgage application volume jumped 9.2% last week compared to the previous week. That's according to the Mortgage Bankers Association seasonally adjusted index. The week's results include an adjustment for the Labor Day holiday. The average contract interest rate for a 30-year mortgage with conforming loan balances decreased to 6.49%, down from 6.64%. So we had a 15 basis point decline in mortgage rates. And we saw a big jump in mortgage applications. Mortgage rates declined for the second consecutive week as Treasury yields moved lower on data indicating that the labor market is weakening, said Joel Kahn, an MBA economist in the release, noting that this was the lowest rate since October of 2024. The downward rate movement spurred the strongest week of borrower demand since 2022, with both purchase and refinance applications moving higher. As a result, applications to refinance a home loan jumped by 12% for the week and were 34% higher than the same week a year ago. The refinance share of mortgage activity increased to 48.8% of the total, up from 46.9% in the previous week. And also, applications to buy a home increased by 7%. So some signs of life in the housing market off of those lower interest rates. I'm not sure those lower rates are going to last. Keep an eye on that one, especially with the Fed coming up next week. And this story is kind of interesting. Block everything protests sweep France, intensifying pressure on Macron. Keep in mind, guys, the French prime minister just had to resign because they couldn't get spending cuts done. We got a new guy just took power yesterday. He's going to try to get spending cuts done. And now people are burning stuff because they don't want spending cuts. It's almost like it's really hard to cut spending. Protesters set fires as they blocked highways and gas stations across France early Wednesday as part of the new nationwide movement. By the way, once you get into burning shit, you're no longer a protester. At that point, you're a rioter. Get your act together, NBC News. But I digress. I'm not even going to go there. Authorities deployed 80,000 police who made hundreds of arrests and fired tear gas to disperse crowds. Again, you don't need to fire tear gas at protesters. You fire tear gas at rioters. All right, tear gas is not a protest control implement. It is a riot control implement, but I digress. The Block Everything movement was born online over the summer in far-right circles, but spread on social media and was co-opted by left-wing anti-fascist and anarchist groups, otherwise known as little wannabe commies. By the way, if you guys want to live under communism, they'll take you in Cuba. They'll take you in North Korea. I hear they're hiring. Head over there, guys, if you really want communism. There's a few places in the world where, you know, it's like sign up for communism and you can get a tapeworm for free, but I digress. It now includes France's far left parties and the country's powerful labor unions. Their joint day of unrest adds to the country's political turmoil after the collapse of the centrist president Emmanuel Macron's government earlier this week, in a similar backlash over proposed budget cuts and broader anger at the political class. So yeah, it's not a protest, guys. This is a riot. Call it what it is. Stop treating liberal protesters and liberal rioters with the kid gloves. All right. Last but not least, guys, we got this in our private asset article of the day. And we're not going beyond the headline here because this is a silly article. It's about this new index that measures private and public assets. But it's the headline that I have an issue with here. More investors want public and private assets in their portfolio. Now there's a benchmark to track this combo. And I'm just curious, show of hands, let me know in the live chat or let me know in the comments, guys. How many of you out there, how many of you investors want private assets in your 401k or your IRA? Because based on my observations, nobody is asking for this. The only people who want this are the people who want to sell this garbage, not people wanting to buy this garbage. As a matter of fact, most people I talk to are worried about their guy buying this crap on their behalf and not telling them. So more investors want public and private assets in their portfolio? Is that true, CNBC, or are you guys really just sell-side research? Are you really just doing the bidding of Wall Street, trying to create the illusion that people somehow want to be used as exit liquidity for the strip miners and robber barons and carpetbaggers in freaking private equity? Gotta love what they're doing here, guys. As always, know what is in your portfolio. They are trying like hell to park this crap in your retirement account. Be careful, all you guys who just check the box and arbitrarily dump your money into target date retirement funds and never open up the prospectus and look what's in there. You are the desired victim of the bailout that is currently underway in the private asset space. Know what you own, guys. And I just want to say thank you very much to John Cook. Thank you so much, John, for supporting the channel. He says, we know how you feel about Oracle and the AI bubble, but what do you think about Theta, all the AI edge cloud computing power using other people's hardware? Are we talking about Theta? Is this an altcoin or is this an AI company? I couldn't tell you, John. I don't know. All the AI edge cloud computing power using other people's hardware. John, I just don't know anything about Theta. All I can tell you is if be careful with anything involving AI right now. We are reaching the fever pitch here. This Oracle earnings cloud is just, it's so over the top stupid. And the people buying this have no freaking idea what they're buying. They're buying a story being spun by Larry Ellison. By the way, Larry Ellison, who was one of the big early investors and pumpers of freaking Theranos. It's amazing how people have no memory whatsoever when it comes to this guy's history. And yet he's the second richest man in the world now. But be careful, because the only place where you will find more scum and villainy than the AI bubble is in altcoins. And so regardless, whatever you're talking about here, all I'm going to say is be real careful, John. I don't know specifics about Theta, but be very weary of altcoins and AI at this phase, sir. That's all I can tell you. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Atomic Coyote says, any thoughts on Elon's plan to have Tesla build transformers? Good to have a domestic source of them, assuming it actually works out. I think it's a good idea. I haven't heard that he has this plan, but I can tell you large transformers is a huge bottleneck in this AI data center build-out. See earlier comment, John, about Theta here. One of the reasons why I think AI is full of it is power demand. AI, right now, all these like contracted 4.5 gigawatts of data centers with OpenAI and Oracle, there's no power for those things. And it's not like power plants are going to be built in a week. Let's say, hypothetically, all of the Gretas of the world just keep their mouths shut and leave their lawyers on standby when all these power plants somehow get built in record time. Even if we suddenly have the urge to do this, we cannot get turbines and we cannot get transformers for those power plants. The waiting line for those things is 5 years long. There's only a couple places in the world where you can get a large turbine and a large transformer made. And everybody's trying to get one made at the same time, which means you got to wait. So Elon wanting Tesla to build large transformers, I think Elon sees a big gap in the market and he's looking to capitalize on it. So it's a good idea, but it's not something that's going to spin up very quickly. I hope they do it. Guys, just a little anecdote. Oyster Creek, the power plant that I used to work at in New Jersey, the nuclear site, one of our large transformers caught fire years ago. It wasn't any, like, no threat to the safety of the public or anything. It was well outside the nuclear block. But the transformer caught fire, and a transformer is basically a small house full of oil. That's what it looks like, oil and paper. And we had to get a new transformer made. It took years to get a new transformer made from Hyundai. They had to sail the thing on a barge across the ocean. They had to put steel plates down on the driveway because the thing was so big and heavy and it didn't sink into the pavement while they were moving it. And even then, we had all kinds of problems with the new transformers. We ended up buying a transformer from a decommissioned coal plant further north in Pennsylvania and bringing that in. And the power plant had to operate at 50% power for several months while all this musical transformer chairs was happening. That was in the 20-teens when there wasn't a five-year line to get a new transformer made. I can't imagine what it's like now to try to get a transformer made. So it's a huge vulnerability. And again, all these people who are talking about remaining performance obligations and contracted data center revenue and signed contracts and cautiously optimistic non-binding resolutions to hopefully maybe someday make a profit, it's all ignoring the fact that these guys could not power these things even if they could get them built, which I don't think they can. Thank you very much, Atomic Coyote, for supporting the channel. And the Feral Grandma, I love that name. Feral Grandma says, a little love for the shiny. I like the shiny. Thank you so much, Grandma, for supporting the channel. Got a whole lot of love for the shiny here. Guys, when you see things getting so ridiculous, again, the ultimate safe haven asset is gold and its white cousin silver. So the more ridiculous I see this stuff getting, the more I want to own gold. WorldCoin treasury companies rallying 3,000% in a day. Give me a break, guys. I mentioned on Twitter the other day, this is the punchline of a joke that hasn't even been told yet. History will mock this market. Make no mistake. Thank you, Feral Grandma. And thank you to Tugs McBoat. Did I get that right? Thank you, Tugs McBoat. He says, Gamers Nexus NVIDIA Exposé is back online. Yes, it is. Congratulations, Gamers Nexus. Up yours, Bloomberg. If you want independent journalism to continue, boost the algo with a like, comment, and subscribe. Thank you, Tugs. Excellent point. Gamers Nexus did a fantastic video about the black market for NVIDIA's GPUs, exposing how NVIDIA is just turning a blind eye to illegal sales into China. Why? Because they're getting rich off of it, of course. They did a whole big video about it. And of course, the financial press will circle the wagons around NVIDIA every time, much like they did with the Don't Listen to Rando's article in MarketWatch. You guys remember that? They will circle the wagons around NVIDIA. Bloomberg filed a copyright strike against Gamers Nexus because they included a clip of President Trump from Bloomberg TV, an attributed clip, by the way. And of course, YouTube took the video down. Kind of sleazy YouTube. Gamers Nexus challenged the copyright strike and they won. Congratulations, Gamers Nexus. Thank you for doing real journalism. Bloomberg, you suck. That's your job, not a Gamers Nexus YouTube channel or some rando in Pennsylvania. All right. How about you guys want to start asking some hard-hitting questions like what the hell does remaining performance obligations even mean over at Oracle? Or no, just continue with your sell-side research. Whatever. Keep it up. But thank you, Tugs. Appreciate the super chat. Once again, shout out to Gamers Nexus. M&J has been a Melonhead for 19 months. Melonhead member for 19 months. There we go. We got it down. Says, happy birthday, Mishy. Happy birthday, Mish. Thank you, sir. Mish is 21 years old today. He is officially old enough to consume alcoholic beverages. So congratulations, Mish. Thank you for everything you do for the channel. And thank you, M&J, for everything you do for the channel as well. Appreciate my moderators. You guys are awesome. And S.A. says, what's going on, S.A.? Says, haven't heard from Janet in a while. You queuing up my Janet? Well, Janet's been awful quiet lately, but she's been having a lot of fun, especially reading these rumor stories about my predecessor, Scott Bessent, apparently threatening to punch Bill Pulte in the effing face for talking smack to him about the president, or talking smack to the president about him. I tell you guys, when I was the Secretary of the Treasury, things were strong and resilient, but there were no fist fights in the White House, at least not that you know of. There was one time where I had to take Mayor Pete and bend him over the back of the chair with my paddle because he was talking smack about me to President Biden, And President Biden said something about he was overdue for his prune juice at the time, so it never really came to blows. Well, Secretary Yellen, things got weird there for a second. Thank you, SA, for queuing up Janet. You never know where she's going to take things on this channel. Things get weird when Janet shows up. And, you know, Secretary Bessent, just not as entertaining a character as the former Treasury Secretary and former Fed Governor. And I don't know, where's she going to land next? Sooner or later, those speaking fees are going to run out for services rendered while in office. She's going to have to do something else. I don't know, maybe be a bank CEO or something. Who knows? Thank you, SA, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much. Thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Millen Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and the subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm if you feel so inclined. Thank you guys for the super chats. Happy birthday, Mish. What did I forget? Oh, my Patreon supporters. Thank you, Patreon supporters and magnanimous Millen Heads on YouTube for everything you guys do for the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big. We'll be right back.